Hello and welcome back to the Cool Your Jets podcast. I am Michael Nania. It is January 14th, 2026, 11:23 a.m. Eastern Standard Time as we record this. The New York Jets are well removed at this point from the 2025 season. It has been 10 days at this point since their season finale against the Buffalo Bills. We got a long offseason ahead of us. Lots to talk about. Coaching changes will be coming up, presumably, in the coming weeks. A new defensive coordinator will be in the building. There's still the possibility of position coaching changes underneath that on both sides of the ball. Free agency and the draft after that, and all of the lead up to the draft, combine, pro days, all of the good stuff. We'll be getting into all those things as they happen throughout the coming weeks and months, but today I wanted to focus on a very specific topic that I have been diving into in my articles at Jets X Factor over the past 4 days, and that would be the 2026 quarterback class, specifically evaluating them based on metrics that are intended to be predictive regarding their chances of success in the NFL. So, you know, quarterback evaluation is such a difficult thing. We all take our best stabs at it every single year. We watch film, we look at various stats, we read quotes from coaches and people in the building about their leadership and their intangibles. We, you know, maybe some of us take opinions from, you know, or we accumulate opinions from all the different draft experts out there, and we think about scheme fit with particular teams. We compare them to past prospects. We do all different things to try and project how these guys are going to work out. And it's an inexact science. We all have our hits and our misses over the years if we go back through our tweets. For me, my articles, your text messages with people you talk football with. We've all had some great takes and we've all had some bad takes. And the same goes for NFL teams. They've all had their share of hits and misses. For the Jets, of course, a lot more misses than hits at the quarterback position. But I wanted to try and see if there was anything at all from a statistical perspective that in recent NFL history has proven to have any sort of predictive weight in predicting how these prospects would perform in the NFL. And I'm looking at it through the lens of what we know right now on January 14th, 2026. What we can look at with the prospects we're talking about today, Dante Moore, Ty Simpson, Fernando Mendoza, all these guys, is there anything we could look at right now based on their college performance, their metrics from their final college seasons, that can tell us whether or not these guys have a strong chance of succeeding at the NFL level? That is essentially the question that I wanted to set out and answer. So what I did was I took the 35 quarterbacks who were drafted in the first round from 2015 to 2024. I calculated their performance in the NFL, and that's a difficult thing to quantify, but essentially what I did was I combined their passer rating, adjusted EPA per play, and their overall Pro Football Focus grades. I combined all of that into one number, a 0 to 100 scale, to essentially quantify how successful they've been in the league since they were drafted. And I want to see how that number correlated with a ton of different metrics from their college, from their final college seasons. And I went all across the board. I took some overall performance metrics, like their adjusted completion percentage, their overall PFF grades, their efficiency at various levels of the field. But I also took a lot of stylistic kind of based metrics. You know, how often do they scramble? What's their average depth of target? How quickly do they get the ball out? In all, I took 21 different metrics from the final college seasons of each of those 35 first round quarterbacks from 2015 to 2024. And I calculated the correlation between each of those and their overall rating in the NFL. That's the term we're going to use to quantify NFL success. Overall rating, that's what we're going with. So the takeaway, the main takeaway from this analysis, I would say, is that ultimately there really isn't a single metric that is, a perfect fortune-telling number for NFL success, because out of these 21 metrics that I analyze, none of them had what would be considered even a moderate correlation with overall rating in the NFL. With that being said, there were a few that stood out as having much stronger correlations than the rest of the pack. A lot of these metrics had absolutely zero correlation. Overall PFF grade, zero whatsoever correlation. Adjusted completion percentage had no correlation, which I thought was interesting because that's a good measure of accuracy. Basically, it takes completion percentage and accounts for drops, throwaways, things like that. So that had no correlation at all. Time to throw had no correlation at all. How often they fumbled, how often they allowed sacks or pressures to turn into sacks, their rushing performance, average depth of target, none of these things had any remotely useful correlation. However, there were three that stood out as having a pretty decent correlation that you could use to not guarantee that you're going to get a quarterback prospect right, but you could use as a guideline to understand what their chances may be. So those three metrics, and these are interesting results, those three metrics were their deep pass attempt rate, which is the percentage of their total pass attempts that were thrown over 20 air yards. Number two, their turnover-worthy throw rate. Now, here's what's interesting about this one. It was actually the more turnover-worthy throws that a prospect threw that correlated with better success in the NFL. And third is their scramble rate. So the percentage of dropbacks in which they scrambled, more scrambling, more success. So those were the three that correlated the most. And they each had interesting benchmarks to them, a very clear cutoff where prospects below that line generally weren't successful. Prospects above it succeeded at a pretty high rate. That didn't guarantee that they did, but there was a noticeable difference based on these benchmarks. So it's interesting to think about what each of these metrics mean and why this correlation exists. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we get through it. But let's start with deep pass attempts. So out of these 35 quarterbacks, there were 11 who threw deep less than 15% of the time. And out of those quarterbacks, the highest rated based on NFL success is Bo Nix. After that, you got Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Daniel Jones, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, Bryce Young, J.J. McCarthy, Dwayne Haskins, Paxton Lynch, and Josh Rosen. Those are all the guys who threw deep on fewer than 15% of their pass attempts. All of the stars threw deep at least 15% of the time. Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Drake May, Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, Josh Allen, Jordan Love, Justin Herbert, Jared Goff, C.J. Stroud, all these guys, and even, you know, the solid players. You know, Deshaun Watson is in here. He had a great start to his career. It went off the rails, but first 4 years, you would love to replicate. Tua's in here, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams, who's trending up but didn't have great production so far in his career. All of these guys threw deep at least 15% of the time, and it doesn't guarantee this number that you're going to be successful. Zach Wilson is in here, Anthony Richardson, Trey Lance, Kenny Pickett, Mitchell Trubisky, but overall, you look at the guys who hit this benchmark versus the ones who didn't, and there's a big difference in their future success in the NFL. So what does it mean? Why is this metric important? Well, I think there are a few theories, and Robbie had some great input on this as well as to what he thinks is the explanation. For me, I have three particular theories. I think number one, it could be an indicator of just general confidence that the quarterback has, you know, the more often they throw deep, whether those passes are completed or not, because their actual success on these passes did not have a correlation. I did analyze their PFF grades on deep passes, which is a good blend of like their efficiency, the eye test, and things like that to get their productivity. And there was no correlation there, not a strong one. But their actual frequency of throwing those passes did have a correlation. So I think whether or not those passes were completed, throwing more deep passes is an indicator of just general confidence that the fact that they're willing to take those shots is, you know, an underlying indicator of confidence. I think another thing that it could speak to is the type of offense that they played in. A lot of these quarterbacks come from very gimmicky offense. You know, I was looking at this data sample here, and some of these quarterbacks threw behind the line of scrimmage on more than a quarter of their passes in college. That is insane. That's insane. So a lot of these guys come from places where, you know, they're throwing a lot of screen passes, RPOs, easy schemed up throws. So I think the more deep passes they throw, it could be an indicator. You know, they come from a more NFL-ready offense. And from a scouting perspective, you get more legitimate film to analyze because all these screen passes, schemed up gimmicky throws, there's nothing to really scout there. So this is what Robbie attested to, what his claim was in regards to why this correlation exists, is the fact that it just gives you more legitimate film and it reduces your chances of missing on the prospect because you just didn't get enough opportunities to watch them make legitimate NFL throws. So I think that's another part of it. And I think another thing is it could be an indicator of their ability to raise the ceiling. Because in today's NFL, you know, every year completion percentages go up, average depth of target goes down. It's becoming a shorter and shorter passing league every year. So I think most coaches in the league are pretty good at scheming those things open, similar to how it's done at the college level. That gap is starting to close. I think NFL teams are adapting to college a little bit. So I think a lot of teams can scheme open the short game, but the one thing that you can never completely scheme open is the deep game. Because even if you do create good opportunities as a coach, you have to have a quarterback with the arm and the accuracy, touch, anticipation to hit those deep throws. They're always going to be very challenging throws that come down to the ability of the quarterback. So I think the more of those throws they attempted in college, it indicates that this is a guy with the ceiling to, in the NFL, if he can develop that deep accuracy, become a star caliber quarterback and not just a game manager type who's going to go with the flow of the offense on the short game, intermediate game, but isn't going to take the top off of a defense. So those are my theories as to why this correlation exists, but it's noticeable. And you could look at, if you're more of a visual person, especially with these numbers, it's a lot easier to understand and grasp if you're visualizing it as opposed to me yapping it to you right now. So the articles are all on Jets X Factor. Check them out. Plenty of great color-coded charts that I screenshotted off of Google Sheets. So you can look at those and it will give you a better idea of what I am talking about. So that's deep pass attempt rate. Let's move on to the most interesting of these three, turnover-worthy throws. As I said, there was a positive correlation here. So as quarterbacks threw more turnover-worthy passes in their final college seasons, they became more likely to succeed in the league. So what does that mean? Obviously, that seems counterintuitive. It's not like you are watching college film and a guy throws a bad interception or a dropped interception and you're like, yes, that's my guy. Draft him right there. That's not really the point. I think it's more, you know, in a vacuum, a turnover-worthy throw is a bad thing. And in a vacuum, throwing a deep pass isn't necessarily good. Scrambling isn't necessarily good. So it's not about the results themselves. I think it's about what these trends are indicative of. Because when you scout college quarterbacks or players, regardless of position, production isn't what matters. It's not about them making an impact for their college teams. Because as we know, pretty much every player who gets drafted and gets to the NFL was a dominant college player. There are well over 100 teams, there are thousands of players, and only the cream of the crop is going to get to the league. Everyone who makes it to the NFL was dominant in college, which, side note, this is why that conversation, would the Jets beat Indiana, and the same topic you get every single year, is ridiculous. The Jets would destroy Indiana, and it's not a conversation, because every player on the Jets, even those randomly generated Madden players in Week 18 that you didn't know about, they were all dominant in college. So that's why production in college does not matter, like their impact on winning. That's not what you should be scouting. What you should be scouting are the traits and the trends, the tools that are going to be brought to the NFL and will be built upon by the coaching staffs. That's what we're looking for when scouting. And I think metrics like these are quantifications of some of the eye test things that we look for when we scout these quarterbacks. You know, like I said, in a vacuum, you don't applaud a guy for throwing a turnover-worthy pass. That's obvious. But over time, over the course of hundreds of dropbacks throughout a season, it seems like the guys who throw more of them tend to be more successful in the league. And why is that? It could be similar to what makes deep pass attempt rate such a, you know, correlative metric. It could just be the fact that guys who are throwing more risky passes are more confident. And in college, it may have led to interceptions or dropped interceptions. But at the NFL level, you can conceivably fix that by improving their mechanics and their accuracy or their decision-making, their, you know, comfort within the scheme. Those are things that can improve the actual production aspect and reduce the interceptions, reduce the risky throws. But when looking at college film, we all want to see confidence. We all want to see decisiveness. And throwing more turnover-worthy throws seems to be an indicator of those things. And that's what makes it so interesting, is we're always trying to scout these intangible traits, these things that are impossible to measure, like, you know, your moxie and your confidence and all this stuff that there really isn't a number for. But maybe things like these can, or metrics like these can be the numbers to evaluate those things, which seems weird and it seems crazy that you would credit a guy for throwing turnover-worthy throws, but it could be an underlying indicator of these intangibles that we're looking for. So I'll run you through the numbers with turnover-worthy throws. 3% is the benchmark that stood out. Among the guys who, 15 quarterbacks out of the 35 first-rounders in our group here, 15 of them had a turnover-worthy throw rate below 3%. And there's really only two superstars out of that group. You have Drake May and Jaden Daniels. But other than that, only two of the 10 highest rated overall first round quarterbacks are in this group. Eight of them threw a turnover worthy pass on at least 3% of their throws in their final college season. This includes Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jordan Love, Justin Herbert, Jared Goff, CJ Stroud, Baker Mayfield, Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams, Deshaun Watson is in there. And Watson is really interesting in these numbers because he still stands out as a superstar with his career numbers because he was that good to start his career. But obviously he has flamed out for on and off the field reasons, injury reasons. So you don't want to be Deshaun Watson today, but his first 4 years definitely are something that you would like to, if your quarterback replicates the first 4 years of Deshaun Watson, that would be an excellent outcome. Just don't copy anything after those first 4 years. But nonetheless, again, we have another clear benchmark here. And, you know, once again, it's not a definitive predictor. It doesn't guarantee a quarterback success or failure because, like I said, we have a couple superstars who did not throw a lot of turnover-worthy passes in Drake May and Jaden Daniels. And we also have busts who did throw a lot. Josh Rosen, Anthony Richardson, Mitchell Trubisky are all in this above 3% group, but generally speaking, the difference is stark between those two ends of the spectrum. All right, scramble rate. Let's get to this one. I'm putting a lot of numbers, throwing a lot of numbers at you right now, but this is what I do. This is my thing. I'm in my element talking about the numbers here. All right, scramble rate. Scrambling more has tended to be a positive indicator for first-round quarterbacks. What does this speak to? I think it shows the importance of general mobility because I did look at rushing numbers in some of these correlation analyses, and there was not much there in terms of pure rushing production, but the scrambling actually does have a pretty decent correlation. So I think it speaks to the importance of general mobility. You don't have to be Lamar Jackson, Michael Vick, Josh Allen. You don't have to be that. But I do think in today's league, you do have to have some semblance of movement ability. The willingness to take yards when they're presented to you as a scrambler, because those scramble plays are some of the most efficient and unstoppable plays in NFL offense today. You know, teams play man coverage on third down a lot, and they do it because they want to blitz, they want to put pressure on these extremely talented quarterbacks who can move, and they want to play press coverage against some of these smaller, faster receivers that the league has gravitated towards. But the risk of that is that you leave scramble lanes open and you turn your back to the quarterback. So it's really one of the most unstoppable weapons for an offense. And that's why all of the best quarterbacks in the league are capable of doing it. So benchmark here, 7%. Quarterbacks who scrambled on at least 7% of their college dropbacks, first-round quarterbacks in our data sample, have tended to be a lot more successful than those who fell below that mark. And it's really the ceiling that stands out. So 13 players in this group who scrambled at least 7% of the time in their final college season. You got all of the MVP caliber players in here. Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Drake May, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels is in there, Kyler Murray. So that's out of just 13 players. That's a really solid ceiling there. And once again, there are some busts in here. You have Trey Lance, Anthony Richardson, Kenny Pickett, Justin Fields, and Bryce Young is in there. We'll see what he turns out, but it has not been an ideal first 3 years, I don't think, for a number one pick. But the ceiling is key for scramble rate. So each of the six best quarterbacks out of these 35 that we analyzed did have a scramble rate above 7% in college, their final college season. And it doesn't guarantee you're going to fail if you don't have that. Jordan Love was below it. Justin Herbert, Watson, Goff, Tua, Stroud, Bo Nix, Baker Mayfield, those being some of the top guys. But you have quite a few busts who did not hit that benchmark. Josh Rosen, Paxton Lynch, Zach Wilson, J.J. McCarthy, Mitchell Trubisky, Mac Jones, Daniel Jones are all in there as well. So those are the big three: scramble rate, turnover worthy throw rate, and deep pass attempt rate, with deep pass attempt rate being the most important of those based on the correlation. So what did we learn? How does this help us scout the 2026 quarterbacks? Well, the best way to use metrics like these is to combine them. When used on their own, none of them are particularly correlative, because like we broke down with each of them, even with these benchmarks, there are stars and busts on both sides for pretty much all of them, except deep pass attempt rate. That one is really, really telling. You know, below that benchmark, your best player so far is Bo Nix, followed by Marcus Mariota. That one was pretty strong, but there still were some busts who were above it, so the point stands. So none of these metrics by themselves are strongly correlative, but when we combine these three metrics, the top three most correlative that I found out of over 20 different very specific metrics about college performance and play style, when we combine them, then there's some real correlation. So here's what I found. Quarterbacks who check all three of these boxes, all three of the benchmarks we laid out today, have a much stronger chance of being successful than those who checked two of the three. Same goes for 2 versus 1 and 1 versus 0. So only 5 quarterbacks out of these 35 hit all three of those benchmarks. 15% of their passes thrown deep, 3% of their passes being turnover worthy, 7% of their dropbacks scrambling. Only 5 of them. Average overall rating out of 100 for those three guys, 80. Of the guys who checked 2 out of 3 boxes, it goes down to 67. Those who checked 1 out of 3, 56. Those who checked none of the three, 43. So that's a very clear correlation that the more boxes you check out of these three benchmarks we laid out, it's a lot likelier you're going to be successful in the NFL. So let's look at that top tier of guys who hit all three of those boxes. And if you're still listening to this after all the analytical nerdy rambling, kudos to you, and I greatly appreciate it. Anyway, 3 out of 3 boxes. Here are the 5: Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Anthony Richardson. So still not perfect because we have Anthony Richardson in there. But if I could have a 4 out of 5 chance at having Mahomes, Burrow, Jackson, or Allen, I'll take that. I'll take that every single day in my quarterback prospect You go to the two box players. We have Drake May, Drayton Daniels, Jordan Love, Jared Goff, CJ Stroud, all at the top of that list. And not a super high bust rate. You know, out of these two box check players, you have Trey Lance, you have Kenny Pickett, you have Mitchell Trubisky. But the fourth worst player in this group out of about 14 that are in here, Sam Darnold is the fourth worst player. And even he, and it took him a long time. He had a very weak start to his career, but that's not a bad floor or bad, you know, fourth worst player out of this group. You go down to the one box players. Now you see a pretty significant jump and the hit rate is pretty low. Justin Herbert is at the top here, but then you go to Deshaun Watson, then to Tua, you know, two guys who have put up numbers at various points, but ultimately I don't think you would consider either of those picks what you would ideally want to get at the slots they were taken. Fourth is Mariota, Jameis Winston, Michael Penix, Daniel Jones, Justin Fields, Bryce Young, Zach Wilson, Josh Rosen. Those are your players who only hit one out of the three boxes that we laid out. Then you go to zero out of the three, and you have Bo Nix, Mac Jones, J.J. McCarthy, Dwayne Haskins, Paxton Lynch. So going down the list, pretty strong correlation here of, or at least relatively strong compared to any of these metrics on their own. Decent correlation with NFL success. So how does the 2026 class fare in these metrics? We laid it out. What is the most predictive? Why does it matter? Now let's look at how it applies to the 2026 class. Fernando Mendoza, projected number one pick. We'll see if that's set in stone or if the Raiders go a different direction, but it's trending towards him going number one. Fernando Mendoza only hit one out of these three benchmarks. His turnover-worthy throw rate was only under 3%, just under it at 2.5%. Then you have his scramble rate, which is the lone box that he checks, 7.8%. So he does have a scramble rate that's similar to some of your star quarterback hits over the past decade. But his deep pass attempt rate is below the ideal threshold, only 14.4% of his attempts. So he is a one box player out of these three boxes that we established here. Let's go to Ty Simpson. Ty Simpson is also a one-box player in this analysis here. So he had a 3% turnover-worthy throw rate, so he just enough hits that benchmark. Throwing a good number of risky passes. He actually only had 5 interceptions, I believe, but his turnover-worthy throws were a lot higher than that. He got away with them. So he hits this benchmark, and like we said, it seems counterintuitive. Why are we praising him for throwing potential interceptions? But there is a very noticeable trend here that most of the star quarterbacks out of the first round were throwing a lot of these passes. So it is a good sign for him that he hits that. Scrambling, though, 6.1% of his dropbacks. That's below, and his deep pass attempt rate is well below the 15% mark at 13.1%. So he checks one out of the three boxes as well. Also not a good sign. And Dante Moore, this is the guy who is going to make his decision at some point today as I'm recording this. Nothing has come out yet, but we'll see. By the time you're listening to this, he's probably made a decision. He is, if he comes out, the favorite to get selected by the Jets second overall. Dante Moore, how did he fare in these predictive metrics? Well, turnover-worthy throw rate, 2.7%. A few ticks below the benchmark. Scramble rate, 4.8%, well below the benchmark. Deep pass attempt rate, 13.3%, well below the benchmark, making him a zero box checked player. Not ideal. And then going down the list of, even if you want to throw in some of the other quarterbacks here who are not in that consensus top three, but who knows who skyrockets into the first round. This is not considered a strong class, and we see late risers all the time, so worth throwing some of these other guys in here. Trinidad Chambliss is a guy who's been thrown into the mix recently, had a hot playoff run, and now it's looking like he'll have to declare for the draft. as his sixth year of eligibility was denied. That can still be appealed. We'll see how that plays out, but he's trending towards the draft. And there's a lot of hype around him right now as a potential late riser into the first round. But let's look at his three boxes. Turnover-worthy throws, 2.3%. Not checking that one by a long shot. Scramble rate, 4.9%. Way below. Deep pass attempt rate, 12.3%. Well below. So he is also a zero-box player out of the three. So out of these four guys, you have Mendoza and Simpson who hit one apiece, neither of them being deep passes, which is the most important. And you have Dante Moore and Trinidad Chambliss who hit zero. And then even if you go further beyond the line past that with some of the other quarterbacks who are projected to go after the first round, maybe they sneak in, who knows. But out of the rest of these guys, none of them hit more than one box either. Garrett Nussmeier, Drew Aller, John Mateer, Carson Beck, Cade Klubnik. None of them hit more than one box. So what's the takeaway here? I think the claims that this is a weak quarterback class are accurate, you know, and no one else would look at it in this way. Like, oh, I wouldn't take this guy because he throws too few interceptions and turnover-worthy throws, or I wouldn't take him because he doesn't scramble enough or he doesn't throw enough deep passes. That's not really the point here. I'm not saying you should look at prospects and be like, yes, he threw a deep dropped interception, or yes, he scrambled when someone was wide open, and these things are good for their draft outlook. I don't think that's what the point is. It's more that these metrics seem to be indicative of some of those intangibles and traits that we look for through the eye test. And over the course of time, the more you throw deep, the more you scramble, the more you do throw passes that might get intercepted. It seems to be indicative of the traits that we want to see in these quarterbacks. So the fact that, generally speaking, the top quarterbacks in this class are not anywhere close to the ideal thresholds in these metrics, it supports what a lot of people say about this class. You know, there are questions about all these guys, and what we're seeing in these numbers does support the idea that maybe these guys wouldn't go in the first round, you know, Mendoza, Ty Simpson, Dante Moore, if this were another draft class. And just for comparison's sake, I actually plugged Cam Ward and Jackson Dart's numbers into this model, last year's two first-round quarterbacks, and they both fared extremely well looking at some of these metrics. Jackson Dart hit two out of the three. He had a very high scramble rate, very high deep pass attempt rate. Cam Ward also hit two of them. His turnover-worthy throw rate was pretty high. He threw a lot of deep passes, and he was close to hitting the scramble benchmark as well. So those guys, you know, Cam Ward was a number one pick. Jackson Dart was a first rounder, and this seems to justify the fact that they went there. And just for further comparison, I put Shedeur Sanders in there. You know, it was a huge topic. Why did he fall out of the first round? Well, based on this, Shedeur Sanders only hit one of the three benchmarks, that being his deep pass attempt rate, but very low on turnover-worthy throws. Scramble rate fell just below that 7% threshold. And you compare that against Cam Ward, and it makes sense, you know? And that's, again, like I said, teams aren't going to look at it like crediting guys for turnover-worthy throws, scrambles, or deep passes. But I think you combine these metrics together and you get a quantification of the things that do tend to facilitate success. Confidence, mobility from scrambling, and all of these things that you really need to be successful in the NFL and can be difficult to quantify. So it's not looking good for the 2026 quarterback class. And I'm definitely going to be curious to see how this plays out in a few years. You know, is this a completely arbitrary system that makes no sense that I made when I was bored on Google Sheets? Maybe. Did I find the secret sauce to the NFL draft that teams should pay me millions of dollars to acquire? Also, maybe. So let's refer back to this podcast and these articles in a few years and see how it plays out for these quarterbacks when it's a when it's all said and done, or not all said and done, when they play a few years in the league and we can make definitive judgments. Because I don't know, in 10 years, am I going to, you know, will the internet still exist in 10 years? Will I have access to these articles and the podcast? I don't know about that, but 2 years from now, and these guys have played a couple of seasons, let's see if these metrics correlate. All right, so now that we've established that the 2026 quarterback class does not seem to have a high chance of success looking at their futures here, what does this mean for the Jets and their plans going into the 2026 draft? Well, I'll tell you where I'm starting to lean after analyzing these numbers. I'm starting to think that the idea of punting on a quarterback in 2026 is the way to go. And it's not something that I, you know, say willingly, because I get it. Jets fans, we're all impatient. It's been 15 years. Why wait another year to take a franchise quarterback? That's what you ultimately need to be successful in the league. Why prolong it? I understand that. And the Jets may feel the same way. We know every single year that the desperation for a franchise quarterback pushes guys up the board and they get drafted earlier than they should be based on their overall talent, just because they are quarterbacks and every team feels like they need to have one. You know, no team wants to be in the position that the Jets were in last year and may be in again this year if they don't take one in the first round. And that's when you don't have either a proven star quarterback or someone with the potential to be one. Quarterback purgatory. It's not a place that any franchise wants to be. But if you're the Jets and you're looking at these prospects and some of the odds I laid out here, and they may or may not agree with the projections that I've laid out, they could watch the film of these guys, scout them, interview them, all this stuff. Pro days and combine might change things. And they might love them and say, number two pick, I'm taking Ty Simpson or Dante Moore, no brainer. So they could completely disagree. But, you know, looking at this pragmatically, the odds that we laid out for these guys are not promising. And just to go further into that, let me give you, because I also did a similarity test here to show the most similar prospects to each of these guys across the three metrics we talked about. So here are Mendoza's top five most similar first round prospects since 2015, excluding last year, in across these three metrics: turnover worthy throws, scrambles, deep pass attempt rate. These are the most similar prospects to Mendoza. Number one, by far, actually, Marcus Mariota. Number two, Bryce Young. Three, Justin Fields. Four, J.J. McCarthy. Five, Dwayne Haskins. That's not good. It's not great. Now, to be fair, right after that, you'll find Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, then Paxton Lynch, then Joe Burrow. So it's not like there's a direct correlation here. The more similar you are to Mendoza, the more likely you are to be a bust. But even Mahomes being six, you know, we talked about deep passes being the most important of these three metrics, and that's where Mahomes hit the benchmark and Mendoza didn't. Mahomes also threw a lot more turnover-worthy throws. It's the scrambles where these two are similar, but Mahomes, even being sixth on this list, still has him beat. But Mendoza is a lot more similar to the first five I mentioned. Mariota, Bryce Young, Justin Fields, McCarthy, Haskins, all of these guys, not a lot of turnover-worthy throws, not a lot of deep pass attempts, scrambled a decent amount, but did not hit those other two boxes. Those are your top comps for Mendoza. Dante Moore, top five here. Dwayne Haskins, J.J. McCarthy, Paxton Lynch, Deshaun Watson, Marcus Mariota. And these are quarterbacks who, like Dante Moore, did not scramble a lot, did not throw a lot of turnover-worthy throws, did not throw a lot of deep passes. Ty Simpson's top five, you have Dwayne Haskins, J.J. McCarthy, Marcus Mariota, Paxton Lynch, Jameis Winston. All of these being guys, generally the biggest similarity there is that they threw a very low frequency of deep passes, as Ty Simpson did. So, given the comparisons that I just laid out, how confident are you in any of these guys working out for the Jets if they take them second overall, even 16th overall, when you could get a solid starter at another position there? It's not great. And, you know, the Jets will look at it in different ways. They'll watch the film, you know, like I said, do all these other methods of evaluation. But I don't think anything gets more, you know, cut and dry than data that is accumulated over years and years and years of examples, dozens of players who who played hundreds of reps. This is very all-encompassing, and I think it means a lot more than what does our gut tell us about the film, or we think this guy's a fit in our scheme. So given these odds, I am not confident that any of these quarterbacks is going to work out, or at least not confident enough to justify taking that chance at the top of the draft when there's so much at stake for the Jets here. If they miss this pick, they take a quarterback in the first round, they miss on him, it's going to set this franchise back for a long time. And we're talking about, you know, if you want to talk about impatience with the playoff drought, if the Jets miss this, we're flirting with two decades of no playoffs. That's what the possibility is here, because, you know, go through the hypothetical timeline here. 2026, if this rookie quarterback isn't good, Jets are not making the playoffs this year. Probably not winning many games at all. Aaron Glenn is likely getting fired during or after the season. New head coach comes in. And if, again, if this quarterback just isn't good, which is possible, we saw it with Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Josh Rosen, Paxton Lynch, some of these guys who are at the top of these comparison lists here. So if this quarterback is unfixably bad, a very feasible possibility for these prospects, given the trends we laid out. If he's unfeasibly bad, the second coach is probably going to get fired as well. So you're talking about at least the three given years that you usually give a rookie quarterback. Jets will miss the playoffs all of those years. A second coach will get fired. And then it's 2029 and we're back at the well, starting over again. That's what the Jets are risking here. So they have to get this pick right. If they get it wrong, they're going to continue this. And this is also a byproduct of keeping Aaron Glenn, because they could have improved their chances of getting this right by getting a better coach. But given the lack of confidence in that coaching staff, you feel even less confident that they're going to make it work with a rookie quarterback this year, especially these prospects who need to be outliers to succeed. It's hard to trust that these guys are going to be the outliers they need to be under a staff that has not shown that it can be trusted to do that, you know, high quality of a development job. So given the unlikelihood of these guys succeeding and how much is at risk for the Jets if they whiff on that pick in the first round this year, it's worthwhile to punt to the next year. You know, if waiting one more year gives you a better chance of getting this pick right, I think it's worth it. And I don't say that eagerly. I want a franchise quarterback with the Jets, and I don't want to see another season with a boring, mediocre veteran quarterback. But it's better than missing on this quarterback pick, which I think there's a very strong chance of if they take this pick now instead of waiting. So that's the number one reason, is the risk at play here and not feeling confident enough in these quarterbacks to justify that risk. Number two, the 2027 quarterback class. Number two reason here why I think, and this is another article I did on Jets X Factor, if you want to see this visually as opposed to me speaking it at you, but I'm going through my five reasons here why there is an appeal, or at least for me, why I'm leaning toward it being appealing for the Jets to not take a quarterback in the first round of this year's draft. So number two, the 2027 quarterback class should be better. That's the key word there, should. I'm not going to say it will be, because we have no idea how these guys are going to play in 2026 and how their stock is going to fluctuate. There are multiple guys who will not be picked in the first round this year who were getting number one hype before this college football season started. So we don't know what it will be like, but there is a good chance it will be better, because I just laid it out for you. It's not looking good for this class in metrics that are, and you know, that's the narrative as it is. You didn't need me to tell you all those numbers to know that this isn't a class that's considered good. And if you watched them or graded them yourself based on film, eye tests, whatever you might use, you may already agree. But throw in the numbers that I did give you today, and it's clearly a weak class. And these are clearly guys who would not be in the first round conversation even last year, I would think. So just given that, there's a strong chance that it'll be a better class next year. Who's going to be at the top of that class? I don't know. Will, you know, the guys who are projected to go high in that draft end up living up to the hype? You know, you're talking about Arch Manning, and all the other guys in this class, will they live up to that hype? I don't know. But just based on how weak this class is, there's a good chance that next year's will be better. And like we said, considering how much is on the line here for the Jets, waiting another year is worth it if you feel confident that you're going to have a better chance of picking the right guy. You have to pick the right guy. So and the Jets have been in multiple situations where they not forced it. You know, Zach Wilson was a great prospect. Sam Darnold was a great prospect. But they haven't really taken this approach before where they had an opportunity to take a franchise quarterback when they really needed one and passed on it. But I think this might be the spot where it makes sense. And a big reason why is because there is so much appeal to what they could do with those extra, with the extra pick that they get. And by waiting to build this thing up for the conceive, you know, the hypothetical rookie quarterback who comes next year. So number three reason here, they have a chance to build up a tremendous supporting cast around that future rookie. Just think about it. Right now, the Jets are poised to make 5 first round picks and 3 second round picks before the opening game of 2027. So that's plenty as it is. But if you take one of those, you know, let's say the number two pick, you take that number two pick, and instead of taking Dante Moore or Ty Simpson, you add a premier non-quarterback prospect. And now you're looking at that supporting cast around the quarterback being that much better going into next year when you, you know, presumably select another quarterback. So I think it's really appealing to use the next 2 off seasons, the entire wealth of the assets that they've built up, because a huge chunk of it is next year. You know, they have 2 first rounders this year, but 3 next year. So those deadline moves were part of a 2-year plan. So I think it's appealing to use all of those assets to build up the foundation for a rookie quarterback and then put him in it, as opposed to doing it right now while it's still in still under construction. Build up the entire castle around him, then put him in there, as opposed to throwing him in while it's still under construction. So, you know, having an extra pick this year to add another non-quarterback star before you add him, I think that's very appealing. Number four reason here, the trade down possibilities. This is a way that the Jets can amplify this rebuild even further and push their, you know, as many assets as they already have. Just think about if they can get a team to trade up for the number two pick, whether that's, you know, if the Jets don't take a quarterback number two, you know, we'll assume that the Raiders take one number one. So that leaves Ty Simpson and Dante Moore, if Moore comes out, which you might know by now, but number two, at least Ty Simpson will be there. So if there's a, you know, team desperate for a quarterback, Arizona at number 3, Cleveland at number 6, the Jets can start that bidding war, move down a few slots, barely give up any talent. If anything, you know, if they go to number 3 in terms of who they're going to end up picking, and just add extra picks onto this already massive haul that they have. And then from there, you have so much flexibility if you can accumulate these picks. You could start trading up for players who you think are perfect scheme fits. You could trade them for veteran players, wide, you know, whether that's a star, the next star wide receiver who wants out, whether it's the, you know, more offensive line help, whatever it might be, or you could just use all of those picks. And, you know, think if the Jets can trade down from 2, even 16, because behind 16, you have the Steelers, you have the Rams, 2 teams that could be in the market for a quarterback in the first round this year. The Browns are at number 24 if they don't get one earlier. You could trade down from 16 and add another first round pick out of that. So Jets trade down from either of these first round picks, they could have 6 first rounders in the next 2 drafts. And at that point, I wrote this in my article, but the Jets would have to be unimaginably incompetent to not build a playoff team with 6 first round picks over the next 2 drafts. And they have the opportunity to do that if they trade down from one of these picks instead of taking a quarterback, and then use all of those picks rather than, you know, selecting one of these quarterbacks who do not seem to have a good chance of working out. So just overall, there's such potential here for the Jets to build a foundation and then put the rookie quarterback in. It's something they have not tried before. You know, Sam Darnold came in after a 2017 season, in which the Jets, a lot of people thought the Jets would go winless that year. They overachieved a little bit, but they did not have a lot of talent. He walked into a brutal offensive line, a brutal receiving unit. When Zach Wilson came in, Jets were again coming off an atrocious season. And Zach Wilson wouldn't have worked out regardless. I think that's safe to say at this point. But nonetheless, even if they did land a good prospect, it was not the most ideal situation to walk into. They were still really struggling with the offensive line at that point. Now the Jets have the opportunity to build not just a good enough supporting cast or good for a guy getting picked high in the first round, but a legitimately excellent supporting cast. With all these assets, you think about what the receiver room could look like, the offensive line, when you're already adding to Garrett Wilson, Armon Membu, Olu Fashanu, it could be pretty much a utopian environment for a rookie quarterback to walk into. There would be no excuses for him, and it would finally be an environment where you feel like the rookie is getting the support that he needs to be lifted up, as opposed to the Jets expecting him to lift up the franchise. That's what most of the quality franchise quarterbacks in this league, even though they get to the point where they can lift up the franchise, like Josh Allen, Burrow, Mahomes, Lamar, they only got to that point after the franchise lifted them up. When you look at what the Bills did, a really nice job of adding receivers and offensive linemen early in Allen's career. Lamar walks into a tremendous culture and system in Baltimore. The Chiefs select Mahomes and they let him sit for a year behind Alex Smith in a team that's already a playoff roster. And the Jets are in a different situation than Baltimore and Kansas City, where they're not going to be putting this guy into a tremendous culture and a playoff team. Although they could, we'll see what they do this coming year. You know, maybe a veteran stopgap leads them to the playoffs. They set a better foundation, but that definitely won't happen this year if they select that guy. And if they want to maximize from a talent perspective, the, you know, support that is around the quarterback, even if they can't build a Kansas City or a Baltimore type culture and system in 1 year, they could do it by using these next two drafts to really build up the supporting cast as much as they possibly can and maximize their chances of getting that pick right, because it's so important that they do. And if rushing it means you have a lower chance of getting it right, I don't think it's worth it. And waiting until next year, not only will you probably get a better prospect, but you can have more pieces in place to support that guy with. Speaking of pieces to support the quarterback, perhaps none is more important than the head coach. And beneath that head coach, the entire staff that he is responsible for. So that brings me to my fifth reason that punting on a quarterback in the 2026 first round is appealing for the New York Jets. And that would be to get another year to evaluate Aaron Glenn. Because right now, Aaron Glenn's going into 2026 on the hot seat. I think that's the reality. Look, he got a pass for this year because of the trade deadline, all that. I get it. But after what we saw, you know, he was so bad that even with as clear of a free pass as you possibly could have asked for with those deadline moves, he still got to one and done type heat despite that. And obviously Woody Johnson did not give into it. It seems like he was dead set on Aaron Glenn getting a second year, but he definitely heard that noise. And I'm sure internally with the 3-14 record, the historically bad performance in so many metrics, and just flat out ugly product that was put out for 17 games, I'm sure Woody is going into this season with a short rope. And that's why I think Glenn should have been fired, because why, if you're that close already, just make the move. Why are we going into next season with the guy who already has to prove himself, and you create the risk he gets fired in season? But that's besides the point. Aaron Glenn is coming back, but he is going into the 2026 season on the hot seat. And considering the complete lack of evidence that Glenn gave us this year that he's capable of leading a playoff caliber NFL team or that he can develop a quarterback, the Jets would be smart to use the 2026 season to evaluate Glenn for another year before they entrust him with a franchise quarterback, the development of whom is going to determine the fate of the franchise. That is the most important undertaking for a head coach, and nothing happened this year to show that Glenn is capable of doing that. And I get it, Justin Fields is bad. you know, Tyrod Taylor is old, Brady Cook is undrafted, whatever. But no aspect of this season inspired confidence that Glenn can do that. And as a defensive head coach with a first-year offensive coordinator and a quarterback's coach whose history is in coaching running backs and has not done anything successful at the quarterback position, the Jets have absolutely no reason to believe, if they're being honest with themselves, no reason to believe that they have the staff in place to develop a franchise quarterback. But that doesn't mean these guys can't do it. And that's why you should give them another year with a more fleshed out roster. Use all the cap space, all the picks you have to build out the defense, build out the offense, you know, get a solid veteran stopgap quarterback who could just run the scheme. And let's see what Aaron Glenn and these coaches can do with that for a year. That's not to say they should win the Super Bowl, even make the playoffs, but the Jets have more than enough assets to build a roster that is capable of going 500 or competing for a wild card if it is competently coached. So give Glenn that chance. Give him this year and see if he can do enough with a competent NFL roster with a lot of his own hand-picked players for his scheme and vision, and see what he can do with it. And if he could use this season to show you, okay, I think Glenn can be trusted with developing a rookie quarterback, I think he's capable of doing it. I think not just him, but Tanner Engstrand, whoever the quarterback's coach is, if it's still Charles London or if they pick up someone else, if they add to this offensive coaching staff, give them a whole season with more pieces to see if they can do that. And then you're in a really good spot. Either Glenn and the coaching staff do a great job and you feel comfortable, okay, now we'll give you a prize rookie quarterback because we feel comfortable that you have proven you are capable of developing him, or you have definitively proven that you are not capable of it. We clean house and we get our Liam Cohen or Ben Johnson, and he will give us a much better chance of developing that guy than Aaron Glenn would. That's the value of, I would say that may even be the number one reason out of these five to not pick the quarterback this year, because the coaching is so essential to the success of these quarterbacks this year. I just mentioned Johnson and Cohen, but they are the most glaring examples of it. You know, Caleb Williams did not have a good rookie year. Ben Johnson comes in. They're the talk of the NFL right now. They're hosting a divisional game. Trevor Lawrence, 4 years of mediocre play. Liam Cohen comes in red hot down the stretch, 13 wins. Coaching is everything in today's league. And look at Sam Darnold when he ends up with Kevin O'Connell, and you know, now with Clint Kubiak in Seattle. Daniel Jones, even with Shane Steichen in the Colts. The NFL is as much of a coaching league as ever, specifically on offense and with quarterback development. So if you pick a rookie quarterback right now in 2026, you're throwing him into a staff that has not given you any reason to believe it's going to work out with him. And I'm not saying that it won't, it still could. You know, you don't want to fully use the 2025 season against these guys because they didn't have great talent, especially at quarterback. But there was still nothing there to give you any semblance of optimism. And there's nothing on any of these coaches' resumes to inspire that either. Aaron Glenn is a defensive coach. Tanner Engstrand is a, you know, inexperienced play caller whose background is not in coaching quarterbacks. He played quarterback, but he's not been a quarterback coach in the NFL in any capacity. And like I said, their quarterback's coach right now needs to be upgraded upon. No offense, but there's just nothing on Charles London's resume that says he would be a good quarterback's coach for a guy picked in the first round. So there's just nothing there to believe in it. And that's why you need to, I think there would be so much value in just waiting this year out. And then you can make sure you have the right staff in place. Either this staff proves itself or they prove that they can't be trusted, and you build an offensive-minded staff that is more equipped to develop a quarterback. But right now, it would just be so risky to throw a guy in here under Aaron Glenn when there's a very realistic chance that Glenn is one of the worst coaches in NFL history and is going to ruin this guy. So those are my top five reasons why the Jets should not draft a rookie quarterback in the first round this year. Now, we have a few months left here. Let's see how things play out. Who declares? Again, you probably know by now if Dante declared or not. Then you'll see, you know, how the pro days, combine goes, all this stuff. And we'll see what the Jets do in the veteran market if they make a big move or for like a Kyler Murray or whatever. I'm not saying they should, but you could always have to keep that in mind. So we'll see how it all plays out. I'm not sitting here. I don't think I'm yet at the point where I'm definitively saying the Jets shouldn't do it, but I'm starting to lean in that direction. And I think there's a lot of evidence supporting it and a lot of strong reasons behind it. So that should just about do it for me. That's what I had in my mind today. 2026 quarterback class and some of the data that I've looked at analyzing their chances of success and what it means for the Jets' plans going forward. What do you think? Are you pro taking a quarterback? Are you pro punting? Lots to talk about over the next 5 months or 4 months. I don't know math. Actually, it's less than 4 months, so I don't know anything. I can't even calculate the number of months until the draft, and yet I want you to trust my complex formulas predicting NFL draft quarterback success. Why do you listen to this podcast? See you next time. Maybe.